Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
We're going to cause trouble.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seat, broken in a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad day, bad lie, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell and Pelay Show, where Granny loves her medicinal with her whiskey. At dinner in New York City, the Big Apple people just in plastic bags, directing driving in some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do better. All my friends come around, that's the fashion party. Rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess, this tats, tatted my friends, splattered all over Manhattan, should do be shake out. All right, Farrell with you and Mafia on a Monday night. And there's a ton of stuff I want to do on this show, obviously. I think we got Haro joining us here at 9, or I guess around 20. What time after? 25 past the hour, Mafia. And then next hour, Kevin Walsh will join us as well. I think 12 past the second hour. So just bear with it, and you'll dig it. And we'll hang out. 844-843-6879 is the number to call. 844-843-6879 to get on the bench. So there's a lot of stuff I want to get into tonight. Obviously, what I'm hearing, Mafia, is that they voted no. That was right after we got off the air on Coast to Coast, the baseball players union, which we knew they would vote no. I mean, it's getting so ridiculous, like these pathetic offers back and forth. I mean, it's almost like they're just Farrelling with one another. Like, they're just absolutely like giving just terrible offers back and forth, and then they just reject them. And then now what they're saying tonight, late night, as we get into the show, is that Manfred's just going to impose the 60-game season, and that'll be that. And they're going to, I guess, they're going to go play. Is, you know, bottom line is that they're going to go play, and they're going to proceed under the March agreement, everything in the March agreement. So all they've done for this entire 3 months is waste our time. So really, who cares if you're going to play baseball at this point? Honest to God, come back with us.
Hey, everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Farrell on a bench with Mafia. So we know the owners voted unanimously to proceed with the season under the terms of the March agreement with the PA. The league said in a statement after the union rejected 33-5, the latest offer from baseball. The owner's vote now gives Manfred the power to implement a schedule of his choosing between 50 and 60 games. So it could be whatever, 54, 60. It could be whatever he wants now at this point. So, like, we knew all along that that was in his pocket, right? We knew that at the end of the day, we talked to Bob Nightingale five times, and he said at the end of the day, he can always pull out his trump card, which is you're going to play no matter what you think. And that's based on the March agreement, right? So there you go. Just thanks for wasting our time. What a nightmare. Like, Mafia, will you bring out the book of things to remind us never to do again? Do you have that book?
Yes, I do.
Can you put on there, remind us to never fall for the baseball owners and players negotiations ever again in terms of on air and on TV and on radio or on our schedule, on our lives, on our tongues, on our minds. Just never worry about it ever again, because you just know they're going to have a war, and then you know they're going to solve it at the last minute with some funky cold Medina rule where Commissioner Doofus can just throw it down anyway. He gets his way no matter what in the end anyway. Meanwhile, everyone hates his guts. I hate his guts more than ever. Players hate his guts. They always have. They've hated every commissioner. The owners and players have always hated each other. And then when they win titles and rings and have their little champagne party, that's all phony. Okay? So, like, when they tell the owner they love them when they win the championship, just know that they're lying and probably sleeping with the owner's wife.
Don't talk about the dying sport. You got it.
Thank you. Write that down in the book of things to remember to never do. Nick is in North Carolina, I believe, on the bench, waxing up poetically. We also have beers now again available.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so I know you're a sports talk guy. I'm a sports guy, and I'm also pretty political. I am of the opinion now that as somebody that uses sports and pop culture and whatnot as a break from politics, which is my full-time job, right, all these sports are so political and everything going on with all these different sports, I don't even want them to come back. And I, as somebody that loves listening to sports talk and following sports, I hate to say it, but even when these leagues come back, everything is going to be so politically motivated. Scott, I don't even like, if you were to tell me football starting tomorrow, I don't even think I'd care. And baseball is the same way. It's going to be so plastered with this political BS. I don't even think I want to watch it anymore, which is, I mean, I'm looking at posters hanging on my walls. I got hats and shirts and everything. And I don't even care anymore.
So let me ask you a question. So for a living, you're in politics?
Yeah. I work in the media field, and I listen to politics, and I'm in the trenches of politics 24/7.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. So leaving that aside, when you're watching sports, if it were to come back, now listen, I'm on the same page as you in some capacity or another, like, and I'll tell you why in a second. But if you're watching a game, right, and you feel that any games in the fall, or let's say baseball comes back, or hockey or NBA, any of those assortment of entrees that you believe that it's going to be ruined by politics, like in some level of what, like, A, that they're going to start talking about social injustices, or B, they're going to start talking about the elections. Which one of those?
I probably more on the social injustice front, which, you know, there is a time and place to have those conversations. I'm not saying they shouldn't be had, but I mean, I remember when you watch the NFL draft, you're watching the draft, and then there's that Dr. Fauci guy comes out and talks, and it's like, hold on a second here. I'm trying to watch the NFL draft. I've been listening to
I get it. Do you feel, hold on. Do you feel like, when that guy talks and he's telling you that, you know, there's reasons for all these states having these massive spikes right now. Let's just say right now, and let's just say in the window of like right now, like here and now in this window where we are today, the guy's saying that there's people dying everywhere and it's coming back in droves in certain states and spiking through the roof. Would you rather not even know that at all than to have someone of that magnitude in terms of science and doctors and numbers that don't lie, like the real facts instead of the political BS? If it's the real facts, you don't want to know that stuff? I mean, I understand it interrupts your game, but on the side, do you still want to know that stuff, or do you find it out anyway some other way?
100%. I still want to know about it, but I think there's a time and place to find it out. I mean, it's like there's not strippers at Chuck E. Cheese for your 5-year-old's birth. Well, maybe there is, but there should.
Well, there are. Actually, I've been to Chuck E. Cheese, and I've definitely seen some strippers there that I knew. They were with their
kids. That's my point, Scott. Is I'm not saying I'm not talking politics at all about it. I'm in this stuff all day. You watch this stuff all day, like a lot of people do, and then you just want to relax for 4 hours.
Mafia just told me that Mafia just told me that my mother was a stripper, and my mother was a. Wait, I think he also said she was a single mom stripper hoe. But I actually, I told him she was a concert pianist.
Nothing of the sort.
But the fact that he just, you know, she's been dead a long time. But the fact, and I, so he gets a free pass on that one. Like if she were alive and told me, you know, that my mom was a hoe or something, there might be a problem. But since she's been long gone, and he, you know, he knew that she played the piano, but he didn't know that she was a piano stripper. Where she actually,
Johnny, how dare you talk about your dear mother that way? She was an angel, putting up with you all those years.
She was an angel. She was a stripper and played. She played Errol Garner songs on the piano. Anyway, let me say this. Like, I get the time is now, or, you know, there's a different time for everything. But you know what? The time is now for everything with social unrest. The world's changing before your very eyes. But, you know, really, not to sound like clever or anything, isn't it always changing and evolving and radical things are happening? And then there's, you know, crazy news cycles, and then there's, you know, protests. Like, this isn't the first time that I've seen protests recently. Like, Mafia, were we not just in a gigantic Black Lives Matter protest in Manhattan like last year, where we were just absolutely attacked in my car on the West Side Highway? Did that not happen, or am I imagining things?
No, it happened just about maybe 2 or 3 years ago at the most, when Eric Garner passed away at the hands of the NYPD.
That one it was. Well, all right. So here's the deal. Like, I respected their protest like anything else. I was fascinated by it. Like, Mafia and I are driving along. Here we are going to work, and there's this giant protest, right? And we see the road is just shut down, and we're like, what is happening here? We're doomed. And then they're just, like, walking on top of my car and, like, kicking my car doors in. And I'm just sitting there going, like, is that necessary? I mean, Mavi knows I threw the flag. I'm like, an unnecessary roughness. And then I, at one point, another one kicked my car, and I was like, that's roughing at 1832. And then I heard all kinds of bad words directed at me. And then Mavi locked me in the car because he knew I wanted to get out and fist fight. I mean, these things happen. You never know when they're going to happen. And, you know, it's like you said, there's a time for this and a place for this. Well, it actually is now, right here and now. There's a time and a place for everything. This is when it's happening. It is what it is. Right? So, Mavi, I just wanted to say one thing to you. You know, when there's when you're constantly telling me about how much time I have left, I only hear it like maybe once every week. Right? I actually understand what you're saying to me. Here's what I hear when you're doing that to me, when I'm talking. Like, at the beginning of the show, I stumbled when you were like, I think you probably said, you're like the guy on the subway. Probably just a I don't know what's happening.
Hi,
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
With you. We have Rick Haro with us. He told me today that he, I don't know if he even knew that he said it, which I thought was interesting. I actually enjoyed it. He said, I'm drinking down by the river. And I was like, what? He's like, I'm drinking and I'm near the river. I'm near the water and I'm not driving to Boston until tomorrow because I'm drinking. And I was like, all right, that's awesome. And then he said, I just ate and I just ate again. I ate earlier and I'm eating now and I'm drunk. He didn't say he was drunk, but he said he was drinking. So I'm assuming by now he's drunk. Rick, how are you, sir?
I don't know what you're talking about. How's that? Hey, listen, let me tell you something. New Jersey is cool. The Eastern Shore, kind of cool. Staying at a really nice place. Drinking is, I had a glass of wine. So, you know, be quiet. And now, so I'm going to Harvard tomorrow. I'm going to get up early and I'm waiting for the baseball results to come in. I've got a call in about 5 minutes. I had heard that the vote's going on. And so it would be good to kind of get in real time, whether we're going to play 60 games, 58 games, 52 games, or whether nobody cares. So I'm kind of, it's like the election results. I'm waiting for that result.
So what we know at this point is that they're going to implement the Manfred decision, like the Manfred mode. He's going to slap a number down, and then the owners have agreed on it. And now the players, allegedly, what we're seeing is that they're expected to vote yes on the July 1st report date, health and safety protocol, lock in a 60-game season. That's the problem, Rick, is that I don't believe now, after all the BS, after all the fighting, after all the back and forth and the name calling and everything else, wouldn't it be just like him to cut it down even further so they make even less money? I don't think it'll be 60 now, do you?
Well, yeah, it'll be 60 if they can get it in. But now we've got the bubble issue. You know, we've talked about that before, you and I, and it's pretty insightful that there is a traveling bubble that's consistent with scheduling that will follow baseball because they decided not to go to Disney World or not to go to Vegas. But they said, all right, let's play in home ballparks without fans. And they're going to have a constricted schedule, so they're not going to do it everywhere, including going cross country. But we've still got issues about the spiking, and we still got issues about hospitalization going up, and nobody wants to be a downer. But the economic issue is just one piece of this. Let's remember that Gary Bettman and the NHL have agreed to their concept with the Players Association. We still don't know the start date. We still don't know the hub cities. And a lot of that depends on things out of the sport's control, which is the coronavirus. So I don't think if it's agreed on, I don't really think Rob Manfred is going to say, well, you know, we all agreed, but let's cut the number of games even further. I think if it's going to be 60 and we're going to have a vote, we may have already had it, but we're going to have a decision, you know, very shortly, like tonight. And if it is 60, they'll play 60. But there will be a lot of teams that are struggling because there are a few teams with, who will lose some money. It's just a question of not as much as if they would have played more.
You mean like your Marlins and my Pirates?
Well, the Marlins have been practicing social distancing without fans in the stadium for you know, months. So they'll figure out how to get that done. Yeah, my Marlins and my – don't call them my Marlins. You know, my Cubs maybe. My Marlins were my Marlins when Wayne Huizinga owned the team and they won the World
Series. Oh, wait a minute. Now stop. Just stop. Stop. Now you're going to act like, all right, at least I admit that in 03 when I was down there and I had the Ferrellovidian section and the Marlins beat the Yankees in Game 6 of the World Series and I went to every single game with all the homeless and drunks and drug addicts and freaks and prostitutes and coke dealers that I rode them to the World Series and I have pictures to prove it of me jumping in the pool at Mikasuki naked with the World Series trophy and the Marlins partying with me. At least I can admit that I was a fan of the Marlins at one point in my life. You're going to sit there and tell me after living in South Florida for your whole life, you don't like the Marlins all of a sudden? Is that what you're going to say to me?
No, I don't enjoy what's happened to the team since you've got to admit that I, you know, have some kind of stake in the stadium and helping get them done. And frankly, look, South Florida is a baseball town. Now, how did it become from a baseball town to having nobody in the stadium? And we can talk about that for years. And we talk about all the guys who were spawned by the Marlins and went elsewhere and its ownership. And I stand by that. I'm up here.
What about the years they won?
Everybody loves Derek.
What about the years they won that you
went? Twice.
Do you remember?
Miami is very spoiled. Miami is very spoiled because they had two teams. Frankly, Miami didn't deserve it. And I grew up there, right? So there are a lot of cities that have gone, you know, 30, 40, 50 years and still haven't had two. So, yeah. All right. So they won. So congratulations. As I said, Huizinga, that was I'll say that he was one of the best sportsmen in town. But I'm not. Listen, when the Cubs play the Marlins, I'm a Cub fan. And you know that. So, you know, stop trying to drag this out of me.
Oh, my God. I can't even listen to you. All right. So you're going to tell me that you're going to tell me. So
yeah,
like, it's pretty much.
You can always listen to me.
It's pretty much the Dolphins and Canes and then the Heat and then the Marlins for you. They'd be in last place in the marketplace because I know that in whatever it was, 6, 12, and 13, whatever it was, when the Heat won their titles, that you were on your knees riding that one like everybody else in town, right? So the Dolphins first, they're your favorite. And then, hold on. Right. Dolphins favorite, and then Canes, and then Heat, or does it go Dolphins, Heat, Canes?
Dolphins, Canes, Heat, Panthers, Marlins. The Year of the Rat, Van Beesbrook. Remember them? You don't even remember that we have a hockey team. Remember that?
Of course I remember.
I went to a hockey game with you, and a lack of crowd broke out. Remember, we had people there.
We like going to games. Now, I was right about the Canes being your number two because I've been to a bunch of Canes games with you as well. But I understand why baseball down there, you know the deal. It's old people. They don't want to go out in the heat. They don't want to drive on the turnpike or the 95 ever. And they're scared to death to do it. And even when it rains, it's like ice and snow to them. And then to sit and watch that depressing team in that miserable sweat box was a terrible experience for people. And then when they moved in to the indoor stadium, which is worth $1 billion, which was fantastic, it was already too late.
I agree with all of that. That was absolutely accurate. Problem is, that there is a public trust attached to all of this, and it would have been nice if the team matched the stadium, meaning the stadium gives you the opportunity to spend money on a team. And how many success stories have we seen where stadiums are built and teams pay back by spending a lot of money and either winning or not? But this was not the case. And so I'm a little, I don't know, bitter, maybe the right word. I'm not sure. You and I know that I'll live and die with the Dolphins.
Did you watch?
And you and I know that I've.
I'm sorry. Did you watch the I hate to cut you off. I feel like you're in Alaska to me. I wanted to say this to you. Did you watch the Bartman piece on the torture that they put that guy through in Chicago?
Witness protection program. What kind of torture? The guy shouldn't have reached for the ball. What are you talking about?
Right? Listen,
yeah, he deserves everything he got.
Really? So did you see the after effects of it were like people were legitimately, I mean, without hesitation, not even close to not being true, that they wanted to kill him. They wanted to kill him dead.
Of course. Well, he should have thought about that when he tried to catch the ball. How's that? You don't hear this from me normally, do you?
No.
How
about this? There were 10 other people
to win the World Series.
There were 10 other people that tried to do the same thing. You're probably one of them. You were probably sitting right there with a hat on.
No, I was behind home plate.
Yeah, that's right. You were in the expensive seats with one of the owners. I believe that.
I wouldn't get out there, man. That's too far away. That's a left field foul pole. Come on, who are you talking to?
Did you see Dwayne Wade said that he liked the LeBron titles better than the 1 in 06?
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't understand that one because he had a stamp on 06, and 06 was a lot different than LeBron's titles. But I was replaying back all of the Dwayne Allen stuff and you know, it's kind of interesting, the Heat history. The good thing about the pandemic, you get to play some of the greatest ever. I've watched every major sporting event that could ever exist now twice. We're all ready for live sports. We know that.
40 seconds.
That's true. So I want to come back and talk with Rick Haro some more, including we went golfing on Father's Day. We went to a prestigious country club up in the hills with our boy High Heat, who is notorious on the bench. Everyone knows High Heat. And he took us golfing at his fancy golf club. Had it all going on out there on the links on Father's Day. We'll tell you the story when we come back on Pharrell on the Bench. Stay with us. All right, Pharrell on a bench. I was just telling Mavi I'm bawling. I'm leaving here at 6:30 in the morning. I'm playing basketball bright and early because it's going to be 90 degrees or something here and blazing. So you can't play in that. You can't run in that for very long before you wilt. And so if you can get in there before it gets crazy, that's what they do. So they're balling early in the morning. I'm playing against a bunch of really good players, allegedly. We'll see. I'll do it on like no sleep till Brooklyn because I stay up doing this and then I'll go to bed. I'll get up at 6. I'll go ball. And then I'm doing this show tomorrow, Bill Michaels show in Wisconsin. I think I'm doing that in the morning. And then we got to do Coast to Coast. And then we got to do Pharrell on a Bench. So busy day tomorrow. I'm balling. My guy told me, he said, it's a tryout for me is what he said. And I said, well, you already know what's coming. So get ready to fit me in. You already know what's coming. I know one guy of the whole pack of wolves. I know one guy that balls. He's good. And he already knows what I'm going to do. He already knows what happens when we play together. I'm going to pour it in like George Gervin. That's what I'm going to do. Mop even knows it. He hates when I talk about it. That's what he knows. He's like, he's sick of hearing about it because he knows what happens. I'll tell you another thing, Mafia. Here's one thing before I go back to Haro. Do you realize that because we do Pharrell on the Bench now that we can play ball again, you and me?
Yeah, I did think about that.
I mean, that's like really good news, isn't it?
I'm missing it. I got to get back to it.
All right. Rick Haro and I went golfing yesterday at the pristine, what was the name of it? Forest Hills Field Club?
Field Club. Yeah, not just a regular golf club. You know, you have golf clubs, which are okay, and you have field clubs, which are better than okay.
Why? What's the difference?
Nothing. I just made that up.
I thought maybe there's are there animals or something out back? I don't, you know, that I didn't know about. Like, is there a hunting club?
It goes golf club, field club, hunt club.
Okay. Oh, is that right? Well, I saw they had.
They had animals all over the place, but those were squirrels running from your drive.
Listen, your jokes are so bad, I have to tell you. But the swimming pool was awesome, and the golf was awesome, and high heats tee shots were awesome. And then I thought on the there was a couple of par threes there where I went big ball up in the air. I remember the one shot that the guy yelled at high heat. He said, "That's the highest shot I've ever seen." Until my 6-iron went higher, landed on the green 10 feet from the stick on like number 16, whatever it was.
He's a damn good golfer, a great host. The club was amazing. The hot dogs were out of this world. And you were above expectations on at least 5 holes.
At least 5 holes. And now, well, that's better than none because I haven't played in 5 years. So I used to play, Rick and I used to play golf together, like at PGA National back when we were, I think both in the 70s. Is that about fair to say?
Well, you're about 50% right. It's probably fair to say, just not accurate.
I mean, like literally, I'm like at the time when I played with you at PGA National, I was at least a 9 or a 10 handicap. I mean, I was shooting around 80, 79, 81 at worst. Was I not?
You mean when you stole the airport sign at Mel Reese Golf Course?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, that was that the time? Yeah.
Yeah. So now,
by the way, the statute of limitations on airport sign stealing, you still have a year to go. So you're going to jail.
Listen, let's get who it's a better story that the feds are looking for me in Florida. So the golf fast forward from that was like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And then I quit playing golf. I broke my hand. All I do is play basketball. Basketball is my game. That's what I play. I'm good at it. And that's why I just think it's more intense. It's violent. It's crazy. It's up and down. It's insane. Golf is really kind of for friends, drinking, business deals, casual people, drinking, smoking cigars, gambling, eating hot dogs with onions on them. It's a little different than playing violent basketball against guys that are 6'6" to 6'9", 6'10", that are hanging on the rim with their onions in your face.
Yeah, different story, different game. But like for the people who want to listen about Pharrell being a golfer, you know, you hit the ball hard. Hit it left, you hit it right hard. Sometimes you hit it down the middle hard. But I was really kind of excited on the shots that you hit sweet. And there were maybe a couple. There were a few. All of a sudden you went from, I hate this game, I'm going to kill myself, to maybe I'm going to have a future in this game. So, a shocker that describing Pharrell's golf game is like wild and out of control.
There was a couple shots where I got in big trouble. So there was one where I went way left. You remember the one where like you're by that second tree and I was like, let's go, we can find this ball. So you and I drove over there and you're like, there it is. And then I got out and I literally jacked a 210 fluffy 4-iron. I mean, I went big ball and made it on the green. And I had a bunch of recovery shots because I had so many bad shots, right? I was always having to save face. But you cannot deny, all I'm asking you for is one thing. When it came down to it, when the kid said that he hit it high, I hit it higher. I mean, I hit that ball so high with a 6-iron up in the air, and it spun back on the green. I went up there. It was so beautiful, I almost took my clothes off. Honestly, you have to admit that my ball went higher. I'm 6'3", he's 6'2". White Chocolate's a way better golfer, but on that particular shot, I actually scraped the moon. My ball went so high.
Yeah, I'm a little unnerved that you were that close to taking your clothes off. But I will say that your upper body and your club control, it was impressive. And I'm looking forward to the next time we play because, you know, it's incremental. You're going to have 10 good shots as opposed to 5. And we're going to continue to do it probably before Wingfoot when we go to the Open. That'll be a good event. No fans, but we're not fans. I guess we cover it.
So, I mean, you play a lot of golf. You play, like, what, four rounds a week at least?
Try to.
Right. Let me ask you this question. If you're the lawyer in the case of Vanessa Bryant, and she's suing that helicopter company, right? They're finished. They're going broke. They're completely in Chapter 11. I mean, the whole deal, it's all going to happen. They're going to go away like no one's business. But they're saying at the end of 21, by the end of the year, next year, that case will go to trial. They've already said they want to move it out of Los Angeles because of Kobe's fame. And because you're a lawyer, and I want to know, because I've been saying on the air that this chick, she'll win the case. She's not going to get any money. This is like OJ. They don't have any money. So what money is she going to get? She's suing for hundreds of millions of dollars in damages for lost future earnings because of Kobe's premature death. What are the chances she ever sees any money? Like, how's she going to get money out of this? You're the smart one. Tell me.
Well, there is a formula in a civil suit where I'm sure the jury has a calculation, and he'll have expert witnesses testify what his earning power would have been over the next 30 or 40 years, which would have been not basketball related, but it would have been endorsement related and community related. And so there's a lot of money, clearly, and there's liability, clearly, but the company is shielded. They don't have a lot of money. You're absolutely right. They will probably go bankrupt. The pilot error, he was flying too low. Who knows what the facts really are, but we'll know that next year. And it's, you know, in a case like this, it's hard to settle because the settlement number has to be so high that they may be bankrupt anyway. And again, I don't know the finances, but that's usually the way cases like this happen.
So with tennis, in regards to tennis, instead of talking about the U.S. Open, which allegedly will happen and all the rest, today was the anniversary of John McEnroe's, one of many epic meltdowns at the All England Lawn and Tennis in London, where Wimbledon would take place in early July. And it'd be going on as we speak, I guess, right? So it was the anniversary, so this would be happening now. And you love tennis. You play lots of tennis. You're a tennis freak. I played tennis my whole life and in college. So was there anyone, like, who was better, like, in terms of, did you appreciate his meltdowns and his relationship with his father? And then, or would you prefer Ely Nastassi's meltdowns back in the day?
Ely Nastassi's meltdowns were a bit more irrational. And I think John McEnroe's meltdowns were clever. It is unfortunate that Hawkeye has basically eliminated any real arguments, except, of course, Serena Williams' meltdown a couple of years ago, which was epic. But so, I you know, the relationship with the father, kind of interesting, and that may have caused all of this, but what two different characters? McEnroe's brother, Davis Cup captain, all of that, good. John McEnroe become a personality on his own. You'd have to say he's one of the top five in American tennis. Top two? Top three? I don't know. We'll see.
Do you think obviously he had slams, so he did really well. Do you think his broadcasting career with his brother is better than his tennis?
I think his broadcasting career has reinvented itself. I think his broadcasting career is a lot better today than it was a few years ago. I think he's more diverse now. I think he appeals to the normal fan. I think there are a lot of people who are young who know John McEnroe, the broadcaster, not John McEnroe, the tennis player, which is what a lot of, you know, these guys who have gone into the broadcast booth are remembered about now, not their athletics, but their mouth.
So the NFL, respectfully, I got 2 minutes. The NFL, they still, you know, are saying we're following the plan, we're going to play, and they've had all these recent COVID tests. College football, same thing, tons of players in quarantine, tons of programs in trouble with COVID. They won't announce anything like that they're going to play the dates or anything. They're just following the normal schedule and everything else. Do you think it actually happens and that we play both and that eventually they'll tell us who the Monday Night Football booth will be?
Yeah, well, a couple of different questions. I think they'll play both. I don't exactly know if it's going to be the same dates. They do have a ability to cut the schedule depending on whether the spike continues to get high. And then if everybody's playing, then we're going to sneak announce the booth, and I have no idea who it is.
So did you see, I'm under a minute here. How about that guy at the golf course that was the Knicks ball boy when they won their championship the last time? How great was that?
Under Red Holtzman, man, I'm telling you, you know, Jersey golf is interesting because you meet a whole lot of characters. Obviously, everybody knows you and loves you. And if they don't know you by face, they'll certainly know you by voice. But there are a whole bunch of people there. We were talking about the glory days of the Knicks. Now, how far back do you have to go to get to the glory days of the Knicks?
I thought that guy, I thought you would have given him a book, too. Signed book. You were giving them out to Haro. You didn't give one to the legendary ball boy who won a ring. It's unbelievable to me. You just completely blew him off. We're going to have to go back and play golf there, and you can bring him a book. I got to go, Rick. Great job today on both Coast to Coast and Pharrell on the Bench. Have a safe trip up to Harvard to see your daughter in Cambridge.
All right, man. I'll talk to you next week. Stay safe, man. Stay safe.
All right, there he is, Rick Haro in his expensive BMW with a lot of fans out at the golf club. It's Pharrell on the Bench. All right, Pharrell on the Bench back with you. 844-843-6879 is the number to get on the Bench. I'm watching old Wayne Gretzky games, and it's just, they were so loaded, man. I mean, oh, God almighty. I mean, that team, are you kidding me? The Edmonton Oilers, I'm just watching this. Like, I mean, they had everyone on that team, all the best players in the world. I mean, they had Jari Kurri, Paul Coffey. I mean, the bad players were good. And I'm not saying either one of those are bad. I mean, those guys are both legends. I'm saying, like, guys that didn't even matter were huge on those Edmonton Oilers teams. You know, later, like, Tiikkanen and, you know, there were better players than that on that team. They were just McTavish. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And all they did was win. I'm sitting there watching them just kicking Vancouver's ass in like a playoff game or something. And it was the Coffey sets the record for most goals by a defenseman. This was April of 1986. I'm watching this game and all kinds of cheap shots in it too. Just watching Gretzky in his prime, like in his, you know, championship years when he was just totally young and absolutely sickening. I mean, oh my God, Cuddy. They have all these players on these teams that are just, it's just so fantastic watching him. And Gretzky's skating like the wind, right? He's just completely a badass. So in the second hour, we got Kevin Walsh. We'll talk NBA with him. I also have a crazy story in my hometown of Pittsburgh. I promised Mafia that we would talk about this tonight. Mafia likes humiliating people and talking bad about people. So we're going to do that as much as possible on this show on a nightly basis.